Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
And welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. If you've been following my work for some time, you'll know that I got my start in apologetics doing pro-life apologetics, defending the sanctity of life, helping people to choose life, to see the horror of what abortion is, to provide them better alternatives, and to make the case for life in the public square. So this is something that's near and dear to my heart. I used to travel the country with a pro-life exhibit called Justice for All. And actually, my wife now, I'm very proud of her. She's starting to do local trainings with that Justice for All curriculum to help equip people. Because a lot of people, you know, you're pro-life. You say, I'm pro-life, I'm against abortion, I'm for women choosing life. But then when the conversation comes up, when the topic comes up in conversation, you start to freeze up, or people will throw things at you. You know, and sometimes their arguments or things that people say that kind of get under our skin in an unfair way. So when the issue of abortion comes up and you say, well, you know, I'm pro-life, someone says, well, how many children have you adopted? And you're like, well, I haven't adopted any, but I would if I could. And that's not the point. I mean, this is, look what this does to babies. And you get all flustered. Or people will say, you know, if you're against abortion, what are you going to do with all these unwanted children? How are you going to take care of them? Are you in favor of welfare? Are you in favor of universal health care? It's easy when these conversations come up to get flustered, to get off track, and not know how to talk about the issue in a persuasive way. That is why I wrote a book called Persuasive Pro-Life back in 2014, How to Talk About America's Toughest Issue. And I'm always happy when people read it. At first, I was discouraged because I would tell people about this book, and they would say, oh, well, I'm pro-life. I don't need that book. And then more and more people started to read it to see, oh, this helps us to have productive conversations on these issues and to have persuasive conversations. So it's not just that you're engaged in a monologue or you're preaching at somebody, but you can help someone really change their mind when it comes to the issue of abortion. And I have seen this myself on Catholic Answers Live. If there's one issue that I've seen in a conversation in a very short amount of time where you can change someone's mind, it's the issue of abortion. I mean, if you listen to all my shows on Catholic Answers Live, whether it's why are you an atheist, why aren't you Catholic, why are you pro-choice, the one that has the potential, I think, to change someone's mind in the shortest amount of time are the shows why are you pro-choice. And I think that's just because the only reason some people are vigorously committed to supporting abortion or to being pro-choice is for an emotional reason. They just don't want to step on other people's toes. Maybe they have had abortion impact them or someone they know in their family. And so it's an emotional issue for them and they want to double down on it. But when you actually look at the facts and the pictures and the images and the ultrasounds, and when they stare right back at you, even if you don't have those visual illustrations, like when I'm on the radio, when you ask people just basic questions about what abortion is, why would people choose this? What is it for? The ugly reality stares back at you, and it's that much harder to defend. But that's what we have to do when we talk about this issue is, as I say in my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, the facts speak loudly so we don't have to. See, it's easy to want to get worked up and be emotional about this issue. I get emotional about this issue. Who wouldn't? You have unborn human beings who are killed thousands of times every day. You have women who choose this procedure, and the regret and the sorrow can follow them for the rest of their life. Who wouldn't get emotional by that? But we have to remember that we control our emotions. They don't control us. So it's very helpful when we talk about such an emotional issue to not become emotional ourselves and let the facts speak loudly, let the facts instill emotions in others, and hopefully they will reconsider their position on this issue. And from time to time, the issue of abortion doesn't come up a lot in conversations. Most people just don't want to talk about this. Usually you'll find the time when you're able to talk about this issue with people who disagree with you, whether it's friends, relatives, coworkers. The most natural times to talk about this issue with other people are when it comes up in the news or, you know, in other forms of media. When it's trending online, there's a news story related to abortion, you have a natural avenue to be able to talk about this. And you don't seem weird. You're not like, hey, Frank, how was your three-day weekend? Hey, by the way, have you ever thought about the issue of abortion? You know, what do you think about abortion? That'd be weird. You want to look for a natural opening to talk about these important moral issues. In this past week, we've seen one that's been on the news all across the country. In New York, so lawmakers in the state of New York passed the Reproductive Health Care Act, and this law basically codifies unlimited abortion in the state of New York. It removes abortion from the state penal code. So now there's nothing criminal related to the issue of abortion. The idea is that abortion is simply just another medical procedure, and the wording of the law allows abortion up until the moment before birth. And we'll get into that in a second. So what I want to do in the show today is I don't want to just rail against this law. I mean, certainly that's one thing we can complain and rail against it. But I want to examine it and then give you some helpful talking points and reply to arguments that people will probably throw back at you. Because that's what I like to do in the Council of Trent. This is not a show where I'm just going to sit around and, oh, woe is me. The world is going to hell in a handbasket. What do we do with all of this? No, I want to give you guys persuasive advice, tips, and strategies you can employ in your day-to-day conversations. And I'm happy to do that, and I want to do that as much as possible. And that isn't possible without your continuing financial support. So if you are enjoying the show and you like getting being equipped in this way, I strongly encourage you to check out TrenthornPodcast.com, where you can make as low as a $5 monthly donation. Helps to keep the podcast going, gives you access to bonus content. So for example, on Sunday, I wrote on our podcast page, I'm soliciting questions from people who are gold level subscribers. So if you give $25 a month or more, you can ask me questions for our open mailbag shows, and I will answer them on air. Whatever you want to know, your question gets to form the next Council of Trent episode. So check that out, other bonuses, and you're able to help the podcast at TrenthornPodcast.com. All right, so let's start. Let's play a news clip from Eyewitness. This is from a local New York affiliate of ABC talking about the bill. This will help us to jump into it and talk more.
Lawmakers passed new legislation to protect a woman's right to an abortion. The passage comes as the landmark Supreme Court decision of Roe versus Wade is at risk more than ever of being overturned.
Eyewitness News political reporter Dave Evans is in the newsroom with details. Dave?
Dana, it was 46 years ago today that the Supreme Court made Roe v. Wade the law of the land. And for many years, a lot of lawmakers thought it was unnecessary to have a local law guaranteeing women the right to an abortion.
Okay, so 2 points here. Number one, Roe versus Wade says that you cannot strike down abortion. It says that you cannot have laws that prohibit abortion. So when Roe versus Wade was passed in 1973, Roe versus Wade is not some kind of federal law. It is a court case. It's a court case that says that if you restrict abortion in any meaningful way, that is unconstitutional. So Roe allowed for abortion in the first trimester for basically any reason. In the second trimester, unless a procedure threatened a woman's health. And then in the third trimester, it said you can ban abortion, but you have to leave an exception for a woman's life or health. We'll get into the health exception here in a minute. So there are local states that prior to Roe versus Wade, there are states that allowed that abortion was legal. Colorado, California, and New York was one of those states. New York allowed abortion in 1970. Before Roe versus Wade came down in 1973. So the idea here is that there are local state governments that are very in favor of abortion that want to have the stronger law to fall back on if Roe versus Wade was ever overturned. Because if Roe versus Wade was overturned, abortion would not become illegal overnight. That is not what would happen. In some states, it might, but in many other states, it would go up to a vote, it would go back to the state house, it would go back to the states for them to decide. So some states are saying, well, we're just going to jump ahead of this in case Roe is overturned. So that's point one. Point two, don't you just love the way newscasters talk? There's a great video, kind of a parody online about how newscasters, they have the same cadence and tone that whenever newscasters talk, it's always in sort of a sing-songy voice. There's this one video. I took the dog to the veterinarian. They looked in his poo. It turns out there was nothing wrong. So whenever I hear news broadcasts, I always think of that news broadcaster cadence and how funny it is. But this is not funny. But when you're dealing with the grim, when you're dealing with the morbid, like I do with the issue of abortion, you have to find the light wherever you can. Otherwise, you're going to be enveloped in the darkness, and that's never a good thing. So moments of levity are helpful when you deal with ghoulish and grim things like this. So let's continue.
But the Supreme Court has lately become much more conservative. Other states have passed laws chipping away at Roe v. Wade. So today, after a long, long wait, lawmakers in Albany moved to strengthen abortion rights in New York.
Abortion is a medical procedure. It is not a crime.
So that's what I was saying earlier, that in New York, what they did was they removed abortion from the criminal code. Anything related to abortion is not a crime. It's just a medical procedure for you to regulate. Now, you might perform the procedure illegally, but abortion itself is not a crime, is what they're saying. But here's the problem with that. Now, if you do that, let's say somebody, you know, a jealous boyfriend finds out his pregnant girlfriend's been cheating on him, stabs her in the abdomen. She lives, but the baby dies. All you could charge him with is unlawfully performing an abortion or unlawfully terminating a pregnancy. Maybe. I don't even think you could under the New York Penal Code now. He could only be charged with assaulting this woman. But if the unborn child is not a human being, then why does, so let's say we've got bad boyfriend Bob stabs his pregnant girlfriend in the abdomen and he's charged with a crime, and you have bad boyfriend Frank who stabs his non-pregnant girlfriend in the abdomen. It would seem that if pregnancy doesn't involve a human, it doesn't involve a human being within the womb, why is bad boyfriend Bob, you can't punish him that much more severely. You certainly can't punish him for an act of homicide that bad boyfriend Bob's pregnant girlfriend can't say, Bob killed my baby, I want him to be punished. You can't. Now, there are states under federal law, and in 38 states, there are what I call wanted fetus laws. So there are laws that protect wanted unborn children from violence, these so-called fetal homicide laws. But, you know, when you take it out of the penal code, then you get these unintended consequences. Like if a woman who wants her baby, if the baby is harmed in some way, she cannot get justice for that child. Because, once again, abortion, as they say, has no criminal element.
State lawmakers from both the Assembly and the Senate today celebrated. A bill introduced way back in 2007 finally removes abortion from the state penal code. It also ensures women the right to an abortion in New York, should that federal right ever be changed by the Supreme Court. Pro-choice activists fear abortion laws could change dramatically and soon.
We have a president who's made it very, very clear that he wants to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Good.
Today, good. Here in New York, we are saying no.
For years, the law would pass the Assembly but fail in the Republican-controlled Senate. That all changed last fall when voters put Democrats firmly in charge in Albany.
And let that be a lesson to you that when it comes to abortion laws, when it comes to protecting the unborn, this is not just an issue of having a pro-life president. We need political figures at every single level of government, both federal, state, local, and municipal. We should strive to have pro-life leaders because it does make an impact. Because you might think, well, if my state senator, what does it matter if they're pro-life or pro-choice? What they do doesn't affect abortion, so why don't I vote for them when it comes to other issues? Well, it does, because they can vote for state laws that can expand abortion if Roe versus Wade is ever overturned. They can vote for funding for abortion providers. They can look the other way. They can say, well, we're not going to prosecute abortion providers, or we're not going to provide inspections of abortion facilities, which is what happened in Pennsylvania with the Gosnell case. If you're not familiar with that, go back to my podcast talking about Kermit Gosnell and how Pennsylvania looked the other way when he was, you know, flagrantly violating state health code laws, and he was given a free pass because he's an abortion provider. That there are people who are committed to the morality of abortion will let abortion providers get away with murder, literally, because they don't want the right to choose to be infringed. So even if these providers are not the most competent people, if they are committed, if they are a state politician or a local politician committed to legal abortion, they're going to look the other way. So as a lesson there, look, contact your local Right to Life organization and see which politicians support life and which don't. I don't care what party they're a part of, but you should vote for the ones. Because people say to me, well, is abortion the only issue? Abortion isn't the only issue. I say, well, yeah, it's not the only issue. Just like slavery was not the only issue 150 years ago, but it is the most important issue. Here's another way that I phrase it with people when they say, why would you be a single issue voter? Like, how can you just vote for somebody based on only one issue? Don't you have to look at all the issues? I said this a lot back when Barack Obama was president, when Barack Obama was running for president. And I said, I would not vote for someone. I would never vote for someone who thought that Barack Obama was not a person because of his skin color. Much the same way, how could I vote for someone who thinks a child in the womb is not a person because of his or her level of development? So that's something you can bring up right there, that if you would not vote for someone who would deny large groups of the human community are persons, someone who would say a certain race are not people, says that women aren't really people or Jews are not persons. If you in good conscience, who cares? Well, this guy is really anti-Semitic, but my goodness, have you seen his tax program? I mean, this will be amazing. If you wouldn't vote for someone who would dehumanize born people, how can you vote for someone who would dehumanize unborn people? That might be something good that you can bring up to people when they accuse you of being a ignorant, quote unquote, single issue voter.
I support this act. It's crucial that we protect a woman's right to choose, particularly at this moment in history.
That's Bill de Blasio, New York City mayor,
where women's rights are under attack.
But Cardinal Dolan today called the new law radical.
It's so important for us to insist that the protection of the baby in the womb is a civil rights issue. It's not a Catholic issue. It's not a religious issue. It is a civil rights issue.
That the Cardinal is absolutely right. And that's what we need to put forward to people. When we talk about abortion and many moral issues, especially things like so-called same-sex marriage, other issues of sexual morality, it's important to not fall into the trap of saying, oh, well, my faith said this. Oh, well, I'm a Catholic, so I believe. No, we believe this because it's just common sense that you ought not treat human beings this way. If you believe human beings have a right to life, if you believe human beings are valuable, whether you're a Catholic, a Protestant, Jew, Muslim, atheist, whoever you may be, you can support this as a human rights issue or a civil rights issue. So the Cardinal is absolutely right there. A quick aside. Now, a lot of people are saying to Cardinal Dolan or to the Bishop of Albany, all right, enough is enough. Why haven't you excommunicated Governor Andrew Cuomo for signing this bill into law, this radical bill that allows abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy for virtually any reason, and to gloat about it by lighting up the World Trade Center 1 tower, the Freedom Tower built on the site of the World Trade Center, lighting it up pink to celebrate this quote-unquote victory. Isn't enough enough? Why haven't you excommunicated him? I've done a podcast before already on excommunication, and I don't want to go too into the weeds on this because it's not that cut and dry. You can't just excommunicate somebody for any reason you feel, or you feel like that they are so flagrantly immoral, whatever it may be. The church has a code of law dedicated to this. That's the code of canon law. And it's the job of canon lawyers to interpret it. One canon lawyer I like a lot is a guy named Edward Peters. He does In Light of the Law. It's a great canon law blog. And he has an article at Catholic World Report called Thoughts on Ecclesiastical Consequences for Governor Cuomo's Pro-Abortion Acts. And so what he says is that when it comes to ecclesial punishments, so for someone like Governor Andrew Cuomo, who supports abortion on demand for any reason, first, Governor Cuomo, barring him from receiving communion, that does not require excommunication. So withholding communion or the Eucharist from someone, you don't have to excommunicate them. Canon 915 in the Code of Canon Law talks about how communion should not be given to someone who persists in grave, manifest sin. And so actually, I think that as what Peter says is that Andrew Cuomo, ever since he moved in with his longtime girlfriend, Sandra Lee, the celebrity chef, that she's kind of known as, I think she's called New York's first girlfriend. They're not married. He's divorced. She's divorced. And they're cohabiting and living together. I don't think he's actually gone to receive communion since there was this big kerfluffle back in 2011 when he received communion and people pointed out that he's divorced. He's living with another woman, engaging in sexual relations with her, we would assume. And at the very least, he's causing grave scandal in all of this, so he should not be given communion. And actually, I don't think, at least what Ed Peters says, is that Cuomo has not gone to receive communion since that time. So I guess there's some things that he does care about, but he doesn't care about Catholic teaching on the issue of life or the issue of abortion. Peters also says in his article that the code of canon law that allows for excommunication related to abortion, that it has to be interpreted narrowly and strictly. And in those cases, it seems that it only applies to those who directly procure or obtain abortions, that it doesn't seem to apply to those who vote for it. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't punish a Catholic politician who supports legal abortion. So Peters says that Canon 1369, for example, it says that a person in the Catholic Code of Canon Law, it says, a person who in a public show or speech in published writing or in other uses of the instruments of social communication utters blasphemy, gravely injures good morals, expresses insults, or excites hatred or contempt against religion or the church is to be punished with a just penalty. And I think the passage of this law and the speeches Governor Cuomo has made, including the stunt with the Freedom Tower, satisfy that Cardinal Dolan or the Bishop of Albany should issue some kind of just penalty. Now, you might say, well, why not just excommunicate them? Think about this. You go back to World War II. Adolf Hitler was a lapsed Catholic. The church could have excommunicated him, but did not, because excommunication is not just a hammer to send somebody to hell. That is not the point of excommunication. Go back and listen to my podcast on excommunication. It is a medicinal penalty. It's to show someone you have royally screwed up in the moral life. You have turned your back on God and the church. You've done something in a grave way, and we need to keep you from walking off the cliff to eternal damnation. We have to let you know this is serious. So it's a medicinal penalty. But if the person doesn't care about receiving the medicine, it just may be a waste to even impose it. It could also backfire. So with Hitler, if Pope Pius XII had simply excommunicated Hitler, Hitler could have responded by increasing his persecution of Catholics at that time and would have resulted in even more innocent lives being lost and really no practical hope of a sinner returning to the church in repentance. So I think, honestly, there should be some kind of just penalty, some kind of sanction from the bishops or from Cardinal Dolan. I think what would help a lot that, you know, if you just excommunicated Governor Cuomo, he might use it as a badge of honor to show, oh, I'm not going to let the church push me around. I might say that you should get him where it hurts. Do not bring him to public events where the church is celebrating things. Say, we cannot share a stage or a platform with you anymore. I think, you know, the Al Smith dinner is one. They always have that with the president, the people running for president in New York City. And that's always kind of a cringeworthy event. And in my opinion, they have a comedian come on who tries to make laughs about current events and politics. I don't think it ever goes very well. But, oh, that's the other thing I hate. I think the Al Smith Center in New York was lit up in celebration of this bill. Al Smith, of course, being the first Catholic, was the first Catholic to actually run for president. So before Kennedy, back in, I think it was 1928, Al Smith was the first Catholic to ever secure a nomination and run for the president of the United States. So he'd be rolling over in his grave now if he saw what quote-unquote Catholics were doing when it came to the issue of abortion, I hope at least. So I that's what I think when it comes to, you know, these kinds of penalties that should be enforced, that you should go, that what they want is they want, you know, these Catholic politicians want to at least have FaceTime and look like, hey, I'm here with the bishop. I'm here with the cardinal. I'm just as Catholic as you are. We should not give them that. They should not be allowed to have that platform if they teach and endorse these gross moral errors and offend against the sanctity of human life in this way. Now, well, a little time we have left. Let me talk about some arguments you might hear or distortions of this bill you hear from the other side. Let's go to Snopes. Snopes is the website that talks about urban legends, and they were good when they did urban legends. They've tried to do fact-checking on politics, and they're okay, I guess. Sometimes they get it right, but a lot of times I see a bias that comes through. And we all have a bias, but I see it here. So Snopes has an article, says, the state of New York has passed a bill legalizing abortion up to birth. Their verdict, you know, usually they say it's true or it's false. They say mixture. Okay, well, that's a start. So it says, what's true? The New York State Legislature passed a law allowing abortions after 24 weeks if the mother's health is at risk or there is an absence of fetal viability. The law, false. The law does not allow for unrestricted abortion up to the normal term of pregnancy. So they summarize, you know, the background of this law, talk about what it says. And then they say here, so they remove from the penal code. Here's what the law actually says that was passed in New York. A healthcare practitioner acting within his or her lawful scope of practice may perform an abortion when, according to the practitioner's reasonable and good faith professional judgment based on the facts of the patient's case, which is interesting because even in states, I think like Kansas and in other states that allow late term abortion, a second doctor has to come in to say whether this is justified or not. So New York leaves it up just to the abortion provider himself or herself, that if the patient is within 24 weeks from the commencement of pregnancy, or there is an absence of fetal viability, or the abortion is necessary to protect the patient's life or health. Health is the problem here. Because in Doe versus Bolton, the companion case to Roe v. Wade, health is defined as anything physical, emotional, psychological, familial, or age-related. And people say, well, nobody walks in at 7 months pregnant to get an abortion because they're having a bad day. No, and pro-lifers should not talk about late-term abortions in flippant ways, but they do happen. Here's a case I can think of right off the top of my head. You probably saw that horrifying show on the Learning Channel. Now it's called TLC because you don't really learn anything. I didn't know I was pregnant. There are women who give birth who maybe they may be overweight, maybe they don't realize it, who give birth and they didn't realize they were pregnant. That does happen to some people. So you might have someone who doesn't realize they're pregnant until the 7th month of pregnancy, and then they'll say that this sudden onset of pregnancy is a threat to their psychological or their emotional health. If they make that plea, there's no reason for an abortion provider to say that they're wrong, because it's solely up to his and the mother's judgment on that point. So Snopes goes on to say, pro-choice advocates, on the other hand, contended that such assertions were based on unrealistic, extreme interpretations of the law. And so I don't know, this is a paragraph, I don't know who they're citing. Maybe they just sent an email to Planned Parenthood or something. So the pro-choice advocate says of the interpretation that abortion is now legal all the way up to the 9th month of pregnancy, till the day before birth. This is only true if you do not trust medical professionals to make informed, professional decisions for which they have been extensively trained and licensed in consultation with the women in their care. Well, that's why we have ethics boards. That's why we have inspections of healthcare facilities, that we trust people. It's like what Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify. And I'm sorry, if someone's going to take the life of an unborn human being, I don't trust them as far as I can throw them. Thank you very much. Do we honestly believe that doctors and other medical care providers will risk their licensure and professional lives to perform medically unnecessary procedures because pregnant women wake up one day at 6 months or 7 months pregnant and decide they don't want to be pregnant anymore? I believe they'll do that because guess what? They're going to have the New York Medical Board. They're going to have the lawmakers in Albany behind their backs. They know that they've got support, that if they say, well, it was in my, they'll say, look, I used my reasonable and good faith professional judgment. An attorney general once told me, who was investigating late term abortion, that he found a late term abortion provider who aborted twins in the third trimester. Why? Because the law allowed for abortion, in this case, late term abortion, if there is a fetal anomaly. And the doctor said, and the abortion provider said, well, twins are an anomaly. It is something that's rare. So then it satisfies under this law. If you know friends also who say, well, there aren't really abortion providers who do this. Some people still don't believe there's abortion done in the second and third trimester. Send them to drhern.com, drhern.com. And he advertises on his website right there in Boulder, Colorado. Colorado is another state that had abortion before Roe versus Wade. So another thing people will bring up is you're freaking out over nothing. This is just 1% of abortions. It's true. Abortions in the third trimester are 1% of all abortions. But remember, there's over 1 million abortions every year that are performed in the United States. So that means that put your math hat on, that's 10,000 late-term abortions. 10,000. That the FBI says, I think that's the same number of people who are murdered by firearms every year in this country. So you have people who talk about gun control all the time, worried about the epidemic of gun violence. It's possible that more human beings are killed by late-term abortion than are murdered by firearms. So you might want to share that with someone to put that into perspective. Also, when people talk about late-term abortion, they still a lot of times don't wrap their head around what this procedure is. So I would recommend get my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, or at the very least, you can go to Gonzalez versus Carhart. This is the Supreme Court ruling that prohibited a kind of late-term abortion called dilation and extraction, where the baby is delivered whole and entire, and then their spinal cord is severed. The court struck this down, but now the most common procedure is either dismembering the child in the womb or injecting the child's heart with some kind of a poison like digoxin to stop their heart and then to deliver them stillborn. So I would recommend getting my book Persuasive Pro-Life in that regard and just reading the descriptions of what is involved in late-term abortion procedures. I also quote in there, so I quote Gonzalez versus Carhart, that you, when you describe this, you can say, look, I'm not making this up. This is what the Supreme Court says. The Supreme Court talks about how during second trimester abortions, quote, the friction of pulling the fetus causes the fetus to tear apart. A leg might be ripped off the fetus as it is pulled through the cervix and out of the woman. Or read Warren Hearn. I said drhearn.com. Here's what he says in his textbook, Abortion Practice. A long curved Mayo scissors may be necessary to decapitate and dismember the fetus. That's, so it's helpful when you talk about this to other people. Remember what I said at the beginning of the podcast. The facts speak loudly, so we don't have to. Just put them out there for someone. And so especially when someone says, I believe in a woman's right to choose. You remember in the news broadcast, they said, we need abortion because we should protect a woman's right to choose. Ask them, the right to choose what? And they say, well, abortion. And then ask them, what is abortion? Can you tell me what it is? And if they're still ambiguous about it, you can say to them, as Father Frank Pavone once said, is this what you mean? And then read one of these descriptions you can find in my book, Persuasive Pro-Life. So sorry to have a downer Monday for you, but you know what? We cannot give up. We have to spread the pro-life message. We have to do so in an accurate, articulate, winsome, gracious, and compassionate way to know that we defend life both in the womb and outside of it, that women who have chosen abortion, God's mercy always waits for them, children who are lost to abortion, we trust in a merciful Father for their salvation, and our Father in heaven trusts in us to spread the pro-life message, and I hope that you guys will do that. Thanks for tuning in. Hope to catch you tomorrow on the Council of Trent podcast. Have a blessed day.
If you liked today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.